And now we're going to move on to our first topic for the show, which is gender identity and transgender issues. For those who don't know, transgender people are people whose gender identity does not conform to the gender that they were assigned at birth. Many people think that this just applies to people who identify as the binaries of man or woman, but were assigned an opposite gender at birth. But the term transgender is actually an umbrella term which encompasses many gender identities, such as non-binary people who don't identify as a man or a woman, gender fluid and gender queer people. There is a whole spectrum of gender identities. For example, some people identify as gender neutral and some identify as bigender, meaning they experience identifying as two genders. For some people, their gender identity is fixed and constant, whereas for some, it is fluid and changeable. Being cisgender, as I am, means that you identify with the gender that you were assigned at birth. A person's gender identity is not connected to their sexual or romantic orientation.
There isn't a reliable, accurate figure that tells us what percentage of the population is transgender. However, some rough statistics have put the figure at 0.3%, whilst others put the figure slightly higher at 2 to 5%. Some, but not all transgender people, experience gender dysphoria, which means that they get feelings of distress or discomfort due to not identifying with the gender that they were assigned with at birth. Some transgender people chose to undergo hormone replacement therapy and may choose to alter their appearance to be more in keeping with their personal gender identity. However, this is not the case for all transgender people. Many transgender people ask that others use pronouns that match with their gender identity when talking to them, such as he, his and him, she, hers, her, or gender neutral pronouns like they, theirs and their.
So today we're joined in the studio by Ben Vincent, who's a PhD researcher in transgender studies and a blogger, Laurel Clayton, Spanish student at Leeds University, and Vonnie Kidd, fine arts student at Leeds College of Art. So I'd just like to say hi to everybody.
Hello.
And I guess we could start the show by doing a quick pronoun around. If everybody says the pronoun that they're comfortable using, mine would be female pronouns like she and her.
Yeah, Gabriella, also female pronouns she, her.
I'm Ben. He, his is fine, or singular they as well, but we'll go with he, his.
I'm Laurel, and I'm using they, them at the minute.
I'm Vonnie, and I'm using he and him and his.
Wonderful. So we'd like to start the discussion by asking our panellists if they would like to share a little bit about themselves and their own interest in transgender issues, and maybe a little bit about their own personal relationship with their gender identity, or as much as they feel comfortable doing so.
Who's going to start? How are we going to kick this off? Shall I go?
Yeah.
Okay. I identify as cisgender, and I think it's important that I recognise the privileges that are associated with that. I'm not at risk of the sort of prejudices and violences that many trans people are at risk of every day. However, there is a certain amount of slippage. I don't like associating with many aspects of masculinity, and I have written about this, but at the same time, the reason why I have come to my research has been my partner is transgender, and I have had a lot of connection with the transgender community in the past, with supporting friends through transitions and so on.
And Laurel?
So I identify as non-binary gender flux, which is, that means that part of the time I'm kind of like, yeah, I'm female, and then most of the time I'm kind of somewhere between female and agender, and I don't necessarily feel particularly gendered, which can be kind of confusing. I only kind of realised this a few months ago, so it's all still fairly new to me. But I started questioning my gender because I started questioning how society had taught me about how gender and sexuality works. I'm asexual, and once I realised that, I was like, well, society screwed up teaching me that asexuality was a thing. Maybe they screwed up teaching me about gender too, and they did. So.
And Vonnie, can you tell us a bit about yourself?
I identify as a binary male trans man. And I first started sort of questioning my gender identity in my early teenage years. And then about halfway through towards the end of my teenage years, I decided that this was a thing. And I just decided to come out and start living full-time as male. At first it was quite, I was trying to kind of fit myself into the box so that I would be understood and read as male by society and everyone else. although I'd say that lasted maybe a year, and then from then onwards I began to sort of explore a bit more about how I can sort of express myself and express my gender identity, and also how about just because I identify as male, it doesn't mean that I have to dress masculinely or behave traditionally masculine, and that I could put on makeup, I could do anything sort of more androgynous or feminine, and I'd still quite solidly be male. So it's been quite interesting to explore.
Definitely. Well, that's a great intro. We're going to come back to our guests in just a moment. First off, we've got an interview with Olivia, a woman called Olivia, who is Gabriella's friend.
Do you mind telling us a little bit about your personal relationship with your gender identity?
Not at all. It's been a long time in the running. I've only recently just started my transition. I've been transitioning probably for about a year and a half now. However, I first sort of realised it when I was about, I don't know, I think probably 16, 15 was when I first started getting the information together. Obviously, that sort of time when you're becoming aware of your sexuality and who you are and how you present yourself to the world is quite important.
Absolutely.
However, I think I first mentioned it out loud when I was 4 to my mother. So that's, I think, as earliest as I can remember there being some sort of, recording of it.
And has she always been very supportive of you?
To be honest, no. It was quite a difficult thing for her to deal with. In the end, I went to the doctor myself on my own and sort of saw a psychiatrist and then came back with my official diagnosis and then sort of handed it to my mother. I think this was probably the 5th time I properly tried to speak to her about it. And sort of with the diagnosis in my hand, it was a bit more official.
Most people aren't actually taught about gender identity at school at all. And do you feel like your education about gender identity was sufficient?
Oh, not so. I had no idea. We had something called personal social education at school, which I guess was sort of encompassed sex education as well. But nothing like that came up, not even to do with different sexualities. I had no idea until I started trying to research other people who felt the way that I did, which is the only way I learned about it, much later on than perhaps I'd liked.
Gosh, and how do you think it could be improved? Do you think it should be something that's on the school curriculum?
I do. I really do. Picturing a sort of, 13-year-old, 14-year-old me, it would have helped me enormously become more comfortable with myself at an earlier age, which might have helped me do other things. I don't know. But you can always, it's not a great feeling not being that comfortable with you.
Absolutely.
But learning about yourself, I think, is so important. Yeah, I think there really needs to be an improvement there. I understand why people don't want it on the education system. You know, people are afraid that it might, turn their children into a transgender person.
Oh, that's such a frustrating thing for people to say, isn't it? It's just so ridiculous.
But you can completely understand it. I don't think it's right, but I do understand where they're coming from.
Okay, great. That was Gabriella's interview with Olivia. So the first topic we're going to start off discussing today is education and awareness. And I guess a good place to begin is school. Do our guests feel like they were taught enough about gender identity at school? I certainly feel like the topic wasn't even broached.
I don't think it was like the idea that, people might not identify with the gender they were assigned at birth was like never ever even considered to be challenged during my education, and I most if not all of the information and education that I've got about trans stuff has come from the community and from kind of websites and my own sort of investigation into it rather than any kind of formal education.
I had basically the same experience. Like, I went to a Catholic high school. The word transgender never appeared anywhere in that. it was really frustrating because I had a friend at high school who was trans, but none of us really understood him at the time. We were all just like, oh, he's just such a tomboy. And he was like, no, I'm actually a boy. And none of us understood it. And I think that like really damaged our friendship at the time. And it wasn't out of malice. It was out of the fact we had no idea what he was talking about. because we'd never heard of it before.
I mean, that's something Olivia brought up in the interview we just heard, which is how a lot of schools, maybe, I'm not sure about Catholic schools, but at least the ones who go with the national curriculum, have these PSHRE lessons. You're supposed to learn about yourself and how, you know, you construct yourself. And that was, transgender issues was never anything that was even mentioned.
I only learned about this through through the internet. Yeah. Through, that's really how I got any education. Yeah.
PSE lessons tended to have, well, they tended not to have syllabuses, and so they'd be structured entirely based on how the school felt like. That lack of guidance, I mean, your question is kind of almost too generous. It's not a question of asking, oh, is there enough? There's nothing. They tend to not even mention something as simple as sexuality. I remember, like, the extent of my education in that respect was a biology lesson where a very stern elderly teacher just sort of stood up in front of the class and said, one third of you will be impotent. And that was the extent of our education that wasn't based around disease. We had nothing at all. And it's just shocking.
I mean, we had the biology lessons about, you know, the mechanics. But the rest of our education about sexuality came through our RE lessons. And it was basically, oh, this type of Christian thinks this about homosexuality. This type of Christian thinks this. And that's the only thing which was ever mentioned. Like, we didn't really get to discuss it. And we were just told what the doctrine was and not if that was kind of the actual opinion of current Christians and things. It just wasn't a very good environment for any queer youth to be in.
Absolutely not. How do you think it would impact trans people's lives if they were taught about this at school?
Well, I suppose it would help a lot in terms of our own sort of exploration with our identity, and it would, because I know a lot of sort of trans and queer kids will feel sort of broken or wrong or in some way, because they just don't know that the way they are is okay, or the way that they're feeling or thinking is okay. I mean, I know when I was in high school in sixth form, I mean, for the first few years, I came out as, I think, queer or bisexual when I was about 13, which turned out to be a massive mistake. But then, like, by the time I came out in the sixth form, I had basically educated most of my year group on kind of queer and trans stuff. And I know when I asked my sixth form to list me as male and stuff, they sent a message around to ask all the tutors and whatnot to talk to the other students about it. I mean, it wasn't greatly successful. Like, it was, I mean, I think some of the teachers just got it straight away and were fine. Most of the students were all right because they'd kind of gotten used to me just being a bit... although, like, one or two of the teachers, like, they'd use my preferred name, but they wouldn't use the right pronouns.
Right, yeah.
So that was a bit interesting.
And that's something that teachers need to be educated about as well, is how to deal with this appropriately.
There's an enormous amount of pressure on queer youth to be responsible for the education of the people who are responsible for their well-being as young people. And that's not okay. It's an incredible amount of pressure to even come out, to have to deal with the various social stigmas and the anxieties and dysphoria and so on that can be associated with being trans, let alone being responsible for everyone else's education.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why sort of educational establishments absolutely need to do better.
Absolutely. And that... Sorry.
So, yeah, they really do. And we've just had one of our listeners on Twitter who's commented and said that she didn't know there was a term for her gender identity until she was 26, and in university, she thought it was male or female and absolutely nothing in between. And
just goes to show.
As you said, like, it's not anyone's position to have to educate anyone else apart from your teachers at school.
Absolutely.
It shouldn't be up to your peers, which is just...
And that brings me on to the next question, actually, pretty well, which is whether you feel like the medical profession is always properly equipped to support transgender people.
I'd say no, not always. We have a sort of laws and rules that are sort of supposed to protect us from any sort of prejudice or just. I've had just so many experiences with doctors and or just admin staff and nurses and paramedics and the like, where they've just been completely, like, not even bothered to listen to me. They've just been all like, okay, well, your name hasn't been officially changed yet, so we're just going to completely ignore this because we know better than you because we're doctors.
Right, yeah.
I've not had any massive experience with sort of medical transphobia, but when I told my therapist that one of the things I wanted to be able to do outside of my anxiety was to be able to wear a binder outside, and she was like, what are you talking about? She didn't have any clue I was talking about, and I had to just sit there and explain everything about gender to her, and that definitely threw her for a loop.
There is no provision within UK medical degrees for any kind of formal training on the needs of transgender patients, be it related to transition or related to just trans people accessing general healthcare and being respectful and understanding gender and how to understand gender in a more broad way, which is extremely problematic. It's a massive lottery as to whether trans people get healthcare provision by people who are sympathetic and educated or not. And that's both at the primary care level, when accessing, you know, your GP for any run-of-the-mill thing, or secondary care, if accessing a gender identity clinic for any kind of gender confirmation-related treatments. Even in that space, the training that doctors receive is incredibly informal, and the structure is kind of a mess, and it's been one of the most widely contested and fought for topics within transgender activism.
A number of friends, including myself, have actually been kind of put off accessing medical help because they just have been absolutely exhausted by the amount of times they've just had to sort of educate people and just not being listened to. Like, when I needed to make a GP appointment, it took me, like, about 8 months, and I had, like, this build-up of issues, so when I went to the GP, I just had this list of things I needed to say, because it had taken me so long to kind of bite the bullet and get that appointment and go, because I wasn't...
Absolutely.
And, I have friends who, like, would refuse to go to A&E when they needed to, or, well, they'd try and argue it out of it, but they might have gone eventually, but they would have been really reluctant to access that help because they just didn't want to have to deal with being treated that way.
Well, thanks for sharing that. We're going to quickly move on now to our next song for the show, which Francesca is going to introduce.
This next one is from a Canadian indie artist who lived for a decade as a trans man but now prefers the pronoun they. This is Ray Spoon with Ghost of a Boy.
Thank you.
that was Ghost of a Boy by Ray Spoon. And now we're going to move on to the next discussion topic, which is stigma and discrimination that transgender people can face. Transgender people disproportionately face high levels of discrimination. The National Transgender Discrimination Survey in America found that transgender people reported disproportionately high levels of harassment and discrimination in education, employment discrimination and economic insecurity, housing discrimination and homelessness, as well as discrimination in healthcare and poorer health than cisgendered people.
Transgender people are also at higher risk of suicide. A different survey showed that 48% of trans people under 26 said that they had attempted suicide.
And the survey before also found out that transgender people of colour experience all facets of discrimination to a much higher degree than white transgender people.
So we've been getting a lot of contact and interaction with people listening on social media. So just to remind you, we're live in the studio at the moment and you can tweet us using hashtag the G-spot, and we are on at LSR at the moment. We've just had a tweet saying, queer with borderline here, being told by medical professionals that their gender identity is part of their mental illness when it's the only thing that they're sure about. So clearly there are some deep failings within the medical system.
Absolutely. So the first question I'd like to ask my panel are, what are some of the unique difficulties and discriminations that transgender people can face?
Well, like you just mentioned with the tweeter, the medical profession kind of just assumes that anything you bring up is just related to gender identity and not to your actual health. So that gets complicated quickly and it doesn't lead to an efficient or effective medical healthcare system.
I know when I was talking to a mental health person, because I was struggling a lot with my mental health, and I've had a number of other things that happened in my life which have impacted my mental health a lot, and they just kept on bringing back like gender stuff, like, and it was like. I was finding it difficult to sort of talk about what I really needed to talk about because they just kept on bringing it back to this, and they kept on sort of telling me that they know what's best because they're the psychiatrist or therapist and I'm the client.
Another important point to make is that trans people are overwhelmingly at increased risk of sexual violence, in terms of sexual assault, violent rape, and all manner of horrible forms of abuse in that respect, be it within existing relationships or at risk on the street. That's fundamentally true across cultures, across countries, and there's been a lot of research and also listening to trans people's voices, of course, to back that up. And we see it very poignantly emphasised in relation to Transgender Day of Remembrance, when we see some of the known names of trans people who've lost their lives in relation to violence, often of which is related to sexual crime as well.
Absolutely, and as well as this, is also things like going to the toilet, little things as well that people don't realise can also affect trans people's lives.
Absolutely, I mean, not even that little.
Not to belittle that.
Look at America, for example. The news about the bathroom bill that some people may have heard of, with some conservative legislators attempting to make it illegal for transgender people to use the bathrooms which they identify with. And on Twitter and Facebook, people have been posting photographs of them in the bathroom that the legislation would require them to be in. And we see women forced into men's bathrooms, men forced into women's bathrooms. And the arguments made claiming that this is to keep cis women safe is entire from men pretending to be women is incredibly disingenuous and a form of structured violence. Not least because it makes it incredibly easy for men to access women's spaces anyway.
Mm. I wonder perhaps if we ensured that schools and kindergarten were less kind of gender binary. You know, so many activities when we're younger, girls do this and boys do this. And actually, you know, going to the bathroom you know, you're in your individual cubicles. Why not put the kids together in the same bathroom? You know, you're stigmatizing everything from a very young age.
Mm. I mean, one of the things which I found online is there's so much backlash against the idea of gender neutral bathrooms. Yeah. Like, it's great. Leeds has them. It's fantastic. But online, you'll see people who's like, oh, no, I don't want men in my bathroom. I don't want women in this bathroom. It's like, your bathroom at home is already gender neutral. What is the big deal?
That's such a good point.
There's an incredible amount of gendered anxiety around these spaces being shared. And that's a result of how we've socially constructed the men are from Mars, women are from Venus narrative.
Non-binary people are from hell.
Exactly.
Yeah.
There's just no space to think beyond this for a lot of people, and it's a real problem. I mean, what more is there to say?
I mean, like, lots of people don't even have the language to talk about gender in a way which isn't already gendered.
Mm.
Like, you can't talk about gender outside of already having all these constructs in your head, which is problematic to start with, because you're already coming from a place which is already influenced and biased by what society has told you. And we kind of all need to start from like a clean slate and just go, okay, this is how I feel as a person. How do you feel as a person? And kind of work it out from there.
Definitely. And I think, and trans people as well often face difficulties in sport and the military. For example, Chelsea Manning.
Of course, yeah.
Chelsea Manning said, we're banned from serving our country in the armed forces unless we serve as trans people in secret, as I did. I think a quote like that's pretty telling for how difficult it can be.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, you alluded to some of... I mean, there's so many different sites of inequality that we could talk about. You mentioned housing. You mentioned the workplace. It pretty much doesn't end. If you can imagine where it can intersect, it does. Mm-hmm.
And intersect with racism as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And people of faith, trying to be involved in a faith community as a transgender person, not easy at all.
We've just had another comment on Twitter saying, also many dead trans people will not be remembered as the gender they ID'd as when alive because their family actively erases it. And this was actually in the news, I think, a couple of months ago, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. With Leela Alcorn.
Yeah.
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 Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
This is
just so awful.
Very much true.
There was kind of a huge push online to remember Leela as Leela and not as the person her parents wanted her to be remembered as, because they refused to bury her and respect her in death as the gender which she was choosing to live as. Absolutely. Well, which she was.
Yeah.
So, she
And that's one person who, by almost happenstance, went viral, so to speak. How many people are going to be forgotten about? You mentioned the attempted suicide statistic. Mm-hmm. That naturally can't include all the people who were successful.
That's very true.
So there's an enormous amount of erasure and invisibility.
So what can everybody do to help reduce the stigma that transgender people face? What can everyone who's listening to the show who might not know much about it, what can they do to reduce stigma?
Listen. And Google stuff. Take the initiative.
Yeah.
Don't rely upon being spoon-fed things.
Yeah.
Don't expect every trans person to be the walking encyclopedia of education for you. Not least because, like any group of people, trans people can disagree. Trans people can have tensions between how they feel they want to be treated, how they feel others should be treated. It's important that people normalise difference. And even just language like cis is a really important step in doing that, because, as we mentioned with education, the vast majority of people, when you say man, when you say woman, people assume cis. And what that does is it positions trans as not normal, which is very different to just a minority, because it puts a certain amount of moral worth in relation to identity. And so by moving away from that, by recognising the validity of trans and the validity of the wide range of possibility, we can start making progress.
I suppose another useful thing to put out is to normalise the idea of not assuming what someone identifies as in terms of their gender, and also normalising the use of gender-neutral pronouns, they, them, their, as singular pronouns, rather than just being like everyone has to be either he or she.
Absolutely. We're going to listen to the second part of Gabriella's interview with Olivia now.
Do you feel like society is becoming more educated about gender identity?
I do feel like the stigma is... I don't know. I don't feel educated is the word. I feel like there are more kinder representations, more honest representations in the media. Mm. But I think education is still something that's lacking.
And do you feel like society is maybe moving away from the traditionally strict binaries of man and woman, or is there still quite a long way to go?
Oh, there's definitely still a long way to go, but there's been huge improvements. I read that Marks and Spencer's stopped gender orientating their toys, and
so
Selfridges
good.
Recently spent a whole month where they had no male or female section. It was all just clothes.
Oh, wonderful.
So, there are advancements, but there is still a long way to go, but that's only natural.
Yeah, absolutely. And can you tell us a little bit about the pressures that transgender people face, maybe growing up in a cisnormative society?
I mean, when you sort of get to my age and you're looking at the job market, it's petrifying, because you know that there will be discrimination and stigma against you, whether it's to your face or not. And the whole idea of being different anyway produces stigma. I mean, we are human. And with a society that's so set on these two roles, when you're just trying to be who you are, but you don't fit in labels, which we're also keen on, putting on people, it can be very difficult. But you know, I feel so awful every time I think about this, because all that I can hear in my head are suicide statistics for people who are transgender, and I just feel so awful.
And what are some of the resources that people can access if they want to educate themselves?
There's loads of great websites out there. I would recommend going to GIRES. GIRES. It's a really, really informative website, and they've got loads of government publications and sort of advice for helping you get on the right track. And also they have loads of links onto supportive websites, maybe for parents or for younger people who think they might be transgender.
And lastly, what's the best way that your friends and family can support you?
My friends have all been really great, and so have my family. But, you know, it's important for us as transgender people to remember that it can be difficult for other people to understand too. So I feel we need to be respectful in the same way that you would ask your family to be respectful of your change. My friends have all been really great and changed the pronouns that they're using for me. And it's just sort of sticking with you and not putting too much pressure on you to change fast, because they expect your transitioning that you're instantly going to start dressing in as your acquired gender. Some people transition that fast, some people do it a lot slower at their own pace. It's just having them next to you there, which is the most important thing. You feel loved.
Okay, so that was Gabriella's interview with Olivia there. And just some quick questions to carry on from the topics we were discussing before. What are some resources that people can access if they want to educate themselves more about the topic?
The internet.
Any websites, particular websites that you found useful?
I started Googling a lot, and there's lots of Tumblrs out there which have trans and non-binary people talking about their own experiences with their genders, and also kind of master posts of people who you can then go talk to, like just, oh, this person is willing to answer questions about this topic and stuff like that. I found that really helpful because I felt like I needed a lot of reassurance that it was okay to identify as non-binary. So I messaged like some people from lists like that, which I just found by Googling, and they were really helpful. So
great.
On YouTube there's a number of videos that trans people have made, either by themselves or with their friends or their parents and their family. And some of the videos, I mean, there's loads. There'll be YouTubers that will make them on hundreds of topics, and then some that will just make a few. But There's a lot of videos of people just talking and explaining things and explaining different terms, and explaining sort of their personal relationship with their gender and their sort of journey with that, and also videos of people discussing things with their parents, and their family and their friends, and kind of how that's impacted their relationship and how they're sort of working through it together, which I think can be really helpful for friends and family too.
Absolutely.
There's some specific websites that will deal with more nuanced issues. For example, there's an organisation called Press for Change, which is specifically about legal representation for transgender people who've experienced discrimination. There's the fantastic group Action for Trans Health, who provide support for trans people who are worth investigating, particularly if you are trans. Let me think.
Well, you've also got a blog.
Well, yeah, a little bit of shameless self-promotion there.
It's really good. I was reading it avidly. It's great.
Thank you. Yeah, at genderben.com. I mean, I don't just write about transgender and gender identity, but I try and make it accessible and cover a wide range of issues. So
go read it. It's fantastic.
I feel like I might have found that before.
Good. Doing something right.
Yay.
We're going to talk now a little bit about media representation. In recent years, there's been a significant increase in transgender visibility and media representation. For example, with groundbreaking people like transgender actress Laverne Cox, who stars in the hit show Orange is the New Black, and author and transgender activist Janet Mock receiving a lot of media attention worldwide. These women have been especially important in giving more visibility to transgender people of colour, who are often marginalised to a higher degree than white transgender people. In February this year, the rapper Angel Hayes came out as agender, and on Friday, Bruce Jenner, former Olympian athlete, a member of the world-famous Kardashian family, came out as a transgender woman, in what many believe to be a history-making moment in transgender awareness.
However, it's not all positive. Non-binary transgender people have very little media representation. Transgender people have also been misrepresented in the media, often being the punchline of cruel, insensitive jokes and plotlines in television shows and films. The media's constant focus on transgender people's physical bodies and physical transitions for those who chose to physically alter their bodies with surgery or other processes can be incredibly objectifying and dehumanising.
So how do our guests feel about the media representation of transgender people?
Well, I've never seen a non-binary person on TV, so I think that kind of sums it up for me.
Yeah, very true.
A really valuable resource that talks about this that I'd recommend anyone who wants to know more about it, there's a book called Whipping Girl by Julia Serrano, who is herself trans, who's talked a lot about how trans characters would, in films and TV, would often be portrayed as either a threat or a pathetic kind of character, and uses examples such as Buffalo Bill in Silence of the Lambs, where sort of you're psychotic and a murderer, or even in films that have actually been praised for their representation, such as Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, the character Bernie, a trans woman, she's seen as always failing to pass, and that passing is absolutely central to her narrative, and quite disempowered and very tragic. There's also been a great deal of issue with trans characters kind of put in as a kind of shtick, then with cis actors used to portray them, which is problematic because it's denying trans actors work and preventing representation, much like if you go back 100 years, people of colour being denied work and it's just been given to white people using blackface. There's a certain amount, not equivalency, they're very different issues.
Yes.
I don't want to be...
For sure. And do you feel like the media focuses too much on transgender people's bodies and their physical transitions?
Infamously so.
Yes. The short answer is yes.
There was an interview in the States with, was it Carmen Carrera recently, in relation to RuPaul's Drag Race, where the interviewer made a massive thing about asking, well, what do you have down there? What are you planning to do? And she was obviously very uncomfortable. She made a point of this. And I think it was Laverne Cox who called her out on it.
Yeah. Do you want to say some more, Johnny? I think also on... there's the infamous interview with Janet Mock and Piers Morgan.
Oh.
Which was really uncomfortable. Yeah. and she wanted to talk about so much more than her surgery. She wanted to talk about being trans and discrimination and things like that, and he didn't really ask questions.
An example I remember from a year or two ago, a really, really shocking one, if anyone remembers the model Jenna Talakova, who was in Miss World, which was sponsored by Donald Trump, who was trying to basically ban trans women from being involved in this. And there was a big backlash and outcry. And one of his big arguments was that her name was Jenna Talakova, and he was like, genitals. See,
oh my God.
It's totally like, and he tried to make that as an argument. It's like this ridiculous spin, such an offensive, nonsensical attempt to delegitimize her identity. Absolutely shameful.
Awful.
Unfortunately, that brings to a close today's show. We'd like to thank our wonderful panelists who came on and contributed to a wonderful discussion. And thank you to all our social media contributors
as well.
Had so
much activity this week. It was great.
Exactly. And unfortunately, this is actually our penultimate show. So join us next week and we will be doing our last show of the G-Spot and we'll be talking about sex work.
Yep. And it's going to be a really interesting show. So stay tuned.